So what I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Lord is the king. So if you can overload more, you will get better effect rather than what exercise you will choose. So you may want to prioritize the load and choose the exercise the person in front of you is able to do.
Yeah, that you hit the nail on the head. So using the exercise and load combinations within the phase of training to elicit the adaptations that you want.
Hi, Tim. It's my pleasure to have you the second time. If you could briefly introduce yourself, that would be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Tim Sukumel. I'm an associate professor currently at Carroll University, but I start my new position at the University of Pittsburgh this next month in September. So yeah, I will be the director of the sports science master's program there. And it's kind of what I've been doing at Carroll as well.
Okay. And you have some interest in weightlifting.
Yes, very much so.
Awesome. So today we'll be talking about a monstrous study you did a few years ago. You have published 3 papers out of it. So the study is huge. You couldn't fit it in one paper. So that's the plan for today. And let's start with why this study.
Sure. Previously it would have been, I think, 2018, Paul Comfort and I ended up getting a grant from the NSCA to do an international collaboration study that was looking at the differences between weightlifting catching movements, you know, your hang power cleans, your mid-thigh power cleans versus pulling variations. And this was kind of a continuation of our work where we had previously seen that pulling variations, at least acutely, would be able to give you as good, if not a better, training stimulus, depending on how they were loaded. So what we found in Paul's study in 2018 was that for 8 weeks, there was a group that either did catching variations only amid, you know, squatting, pressing, etc., compared to another group that did biomechanically similar movements, but pulls only, so they omitted the catch phase. So an example would be the catch group did a power clean from the floor, whereas the pull group did a pull from the floor. What was unique about that study is that they used the exact same loads regardless of the exercise they were doing. So what we ended up finding was that regardless of the variable that we looked at, whether it was a isometric mid-thigh pull, peak force, rate of force development, counter movement jump performances such as RSI mod, jump height, etc., both groups improved, which is obviously a positive. Regardless of the group, they improved, but there was no statistical or practically meaningful difference between the groups. Now, what does that mean? The take home from that is that you can train with either catching or pulling variations that are loaded exactly the same and get the exact same training stimulus. Now, that's kind of counterintuitive compared to what some people may have seen previously, but it did match Paul's early work that when their exercises are loaded the exact same, there's no difference between the two. So what I wanted to do was do a follow-up training study with that, but by using the same two groups, but then adding a third group. The unique thing of pulling derivatives is that if we have a pull from the floor, as an example, as we used previously, you can use much heavier loads compared to a catching variation because you don't catch the bar. So we can use loads in excess of 100% of someone's 1RM power clean. And what that's going to do is help us from the force side of things, where we can develop greater peak force adaptations because we have to move a heavier load. On the opposite side of things, catching variations are usually limited, probably up to about 50-60% to actually put forth a max effort to, you know, with a lighter load. But exercises like the jump shrug and the hang high pull, what we've found is that you can produce a really high velocity stimulus or really strong velocity stimulus with really light loads. And you're still getting a maximal effort because with an exercise like the jump shrug, you're jumping as high as possible, which you usually don't do with a catching variation. But with a high pull, you're accelerating and emphasizing the extension of the hips, knees, and ankles without dropping under the bar to catch it. So the idea behind it was to provide the the lifters in this third group, or the athletes in the third group, with a force and velocity overload stimulus, more specifically, loading specific to each phase. So if we had a maximal strength phase where we usually use heavy loads, we're going to use really heavy loads with pulling variations over 100%, but then the strength kind of phase, we're going to use really light loads and emphasize the velocity side of things. So that was the rationale of the study.
Sounds good. So let's go now into how you set up the study.
Sure. So as I mentioned, there's these three groups. So we mimic the first two groups that our study with Paul Comfort did. First group, anytime they did, this was only clean variations, but at the beginning of the study, everybody did a battery of tests. We'll talk about that in a minute, but based on their power clean 1RM, so everyone did a power clean at the beginning of the study, and we would load the different exercises that we were going to prescribe. So we set up 10 weeks of training where the first 3 weeks were what we call the strength endurance phase, that were three sets of 10. The following 4 weeks were what we call a general strength phase, where we would do three sets of five, with that fourth week being a drop week or kind of a recovery week. And then week eight was a overreach where we did five sets of five. And then the last 2 weeks were our taper. So we did three sets of three and then three sets of two. So we kind of, you know, took them through a brief, I'll call it a periodization model, where you know, going from really high volume to really low volume, but really trying to peak at the end of the study. We did periodic testing throughout. After each phase of training, we did a testing session. So pre-test, following week three, at the end of the strength endurance phase, we tested. After the general strength phase, we tested. And then following the final 3 weeks, the overreach and taper, and the post-test we had. So within that, we tested everything that we possibly could in terms of performances. We did, as I mentioned, a power clean 1RM. We did an isometric mid-thigh pull. And the iso pull, we actually did all four times through a study. The power clean, we only did pre and post, just too many 1RMs in the middle of the study. But then we did 30-meter sprint testing with a 10 and 20 split. We did 505 testing, change of direction on both their dominant and non-dominant legs. And then we also did counter-movement jump testing as well as squat jump testing on the force plates with several different loads. So, and lastly, finally, we did a body composition every single time that they came in to do testing. So quite a hefty study in terms of organizing the testing. We had them in 3 days a week for training and for all 10 weeks. So as you can imagine, the squat, press, and pull variations were all included in that. Every single block they squatted, every single block they were doing a bench press, or, you know, we progressed from doing a military press to a push press to a jerk. So, you know, you're pretty standard progressions. But what was unique in that, what we highlighted was the clean variations that we prescribed. They did clean variations twice per week, and it could have been multiple exercises within the same day. So, for example, in the general strength phase, we had the overload group was doing, so the really heavy group was doing a mid-thigh pull and a clean pull the same day, versus the other group, the catch group, was doing a mid-thigh power clean and power clean from the floor. So back-to-back exercises, but obviously different loading. And then the group that only did pulls, as you can imagine, not the overload group, but the pull group, was doing the mid-thigh pull and the pull from the floor with really light loads, relatively speaking. So they were moving really fast. So over the course of the study, when we had our three sets of 10 block, our three sets of five block, 5x5, 3x3, 3x2, they were, again, lifting or doing two different clean variations over the course of the week. It was generally day two and day three, because we left day one as your, for lack of a better term, your jerk progression day, since they did military press, push press, leading to a jerk. Now, the unique thing that I highlighted at the beginning of this was that the loading was very specific to each group. So we did, in three sets of 10, power cleans from the floor and pulls from the floor. However, before people freak out and shut this off, we did cluster those to make sure that the quality of the technique stayed the same. So for example, we did either, depending on the load, we did either two sets of five within a set of 10, or five sets of two, depending on the quality quality of the technique. Now, in terms of the quality of technique, everyone was screened prior to this study. So these were current or previous athletes. Resistance trained men is how they were qualified. The average squat of every single group was about, I believe it was between 1.8 and 2 times their body weight. So these weren't weak individuals. In terms of the relative power clean, I believe each group was right around about, it was like 1.25 or 1.3 times their body weight for a power clean. Now, the exercise choice was specific to each phase because, you know, with a mid-thigh pull, we can use really heavy loads because the bar's not moving that far. But what was unique, again, was the loading. So the overload group, when doing pulls from the floor, actually worked up to doing 80% from the floor for 3 sets of 10 clustered in there, obviously, which if anyone has ever done that, they know it's not easy. Like 80% is 80%. It's still 80% of your max. Now, when we went 2 sets of 5 for the general strength phase, they were still doing pulls from the floor, but we worked up to doing 102.5% for 3 sets of 5. And again, I don't care how strong you are, you're going to get tired doing that. At the same time, the mid-thigh pull, we worked up to doing 135% of someone's power clean max. So we're really pushing and emphasizing the force side of things. Meanwhile, as you can imagine, a catch group is doing a mid-thigh power clean. You're never going to do more than your power clean max from that because you're not moving it from the floor. So that was being prescribed somewhere in the range of about 50 to 65% of their power clean max. So that being said, you can see the disparity in the loading that's being done. The group in the middle, which was that pull group, did a mid-thigh pull with that 55 to 65%. They did a pull from the floor with those lighter loads. They worked up to doing, I think it was 82.5% for a set of 5, which is no picnic either. But at the same time, you can see how we really tried to emphasize force within the general strength phase. When we got to the taper, we started to switch that a little bit. We tried to work both ends of that force velocity curve a little bit more by really emphasizing the velocity side of things. So there would be training sessions where they're only doing a couple exercises, but they're doing a counter movement, overload group is doing a counter movement shrug with 110%. And then the following exercise is a hang high pull with 45%. So when you have, you know, a near 70% drop in load, the bar is going to fly. Like it's going to go really fast. But what was, again, unique is that at that point, the hang power clean group was actually using heavier loads than the overload group. And the idea there is that if we were to prescribe a hang power clean with 45%, you're not going to get max effort out of it. So they're using loads that are probably 65, 70%. But that was really the goal of the study, is to see how the exercise and load combinations used within, you know, a strength and conditioning program that has squats, presses, pulls, to see how it could change and manipulate someone's performance adaptations.
So, Tim, could we summarize what the groups were and in like 2 sentences, what each group was doing?
The 3 different groups were the catch group, the pull group, and the overload group. The catch group performed catching variations only, and those exercises consisted of a hang power clean, a mid-thigh power clean, a power clean from the floor. I believe that was all of them. And then our counter movement power clean was the other one. The pull group did, pull and overload group did biomechanically similar movements. So if there was a hip hinge, those groups also did a hip hinge. Example, hang power clean group, catch group does a hang power clean, which has a hip hinge. The pull and overload groups may be doing a jump shrug or a hang high pull, but both of those exercises, again, have a hip hinge. Now, the pull group, which was the second group, did those biomechanically similar exercises. So pull from the floor, hang high pull, jump shrug, counter movement shrug, etc., but they use the exact same loading as the catch group. So if the catch group is doing a hang power clean at 60%, the pull group is doing a hang high pull with 60%. Now, the overload group did the same biomechanically similar movements, the pulling variations, again, mid-thigh pull, counter movement shrug, etc., but they used phase-specific loading to emphasize force and velocity characteristics. Example, mid-thigh pull was used with 135% in the strength phase to emphasize force, versus a jump shrug was used during the taper phase down to loads of about 20% component of a PowerClean 1RM to really emphasize the velocity side of things.
That's brilliant. That was awesome. Okay, do we have to add more details to participants?
There were 27 total people in the study, 9 in each group. And we only had, over the course of the study, 27 completed the study, but we ended up having, I think, 29 enroll in the study. 2 of them dropped out. 1 was a non-related injury. He got injured playing a rec sport. And another individual withdrew after just...
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
A couple weeks of the training because he didn't enjoy the training. You know, so to each their own.
Say how you measure the body composition.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we did skin folds for body composition. We didn't have access to a DEXA or like an underwater weighing tank or a bod pod. The skin folds was probably just the easiest way and convenient way for us to get some sort of measurement on them. And what was unique was that we saw individuals, as you can imagine, when you're squatting twice a week for basically 10 weeks, you're going to put on a little mass. It wasn't anything like massively significant, but they definitely, you know, gained a kilo or two over the course of the study.
Okay, and ultrasound, where did you look that for?
Yeah, so we looked at the vastus lateralis and the biceps femoris. So we wanted to get a knee extensor as well as a hip extensor. Obviously, the biceps femoris is also going to be our knee flexor. But yeah, they were convenient muscles, generally measured in most training studies or a lot of just acute cross-sectional studies as well. So we looked at muscle thickness, the pennation angle, as well as fascial width.
Awesome. So I think we understand the extent of the setup and how much work each of the participants and the researchers had to put in 10 weeks. What have you found?
So I'll start with study one. Study one, we looked at the percent changes of each group. We looked at the relative 1RM power clean. We looked at peak force from our isometric mid-thigh pull. We looked at the 505 time on both the right and left legs. We looked at the sprint times at 10, 20, and 30 meters. And we, again, mentioned that we looked at the percent differences. Now, the biggest And I shouldn't say the biggest, the most interesting finding of this entire study, or one of them anyway, is that the overload group, if you looked at the relative 1RM power clean, keep in mind, the pull group and the overload group did not catch for 10 weeks. They did not front squat for 10 weeks. So the only times they were really in that position where, you know, the front rack position, were either doing a jerk, a push press, and you could debate a military press. So they did a power clean at the beginning of the study. 10 weeks later, they did a power clean at the end of the study. And what we ended up finding was that the overload group, on average, remind you, no catching, no front squats, nothing, they improved on average their relative power clean 8%, roughly about 8%, compared to the catch group and the pull group, both improved roughly about maybe 4%. I don't know remember the exact numbers. So we're talking about twice the amount of improvement. And within that study, you can see the individual changes within some graphs that we made. Every single person within the overload group improved, everyone, versus the catch group and the pull group. There were a couple people that actually got worse over the course of the study. Now, if you think about the loads that the overload group experienced over the course of the study, they used 135%. They used pulls from the floor at over 100%, you know, 102.5%. The catch group and the pull group, their heaviest loads that they used were 82.5% for sets of 5, which is not light. That's still a challenging load, considering a 5RM is roughly, 85%. So without trying to get the people to go to failure, you know, we loaded them pretty heavy. Now, what was interesting with that is the rest of the variables that we looked at, isometric mid-dipole peak force, the times at 10, 20, 30 meters, the 505, all of the highest average adaptations came from the overload group. So the overload group improved the most at every single variable that we looked at. And so the take-home message of study one is essentially, you can still improve these characteristics when you use pulling variations that are loaded the exact same. That's exactly what we found with our first study with Paul Comfort. But if you choose to use pulling variations only and you use phase-specific loading, you're going to get even greater adaptations based on the variables that we looked at. So what was unique is that we had such a broad spectrum of things where it was, you know, they ran faster, they changed direction better, they improved specific lifts that they were training, and their peak force production was better based on the power position or the mid-thigh position that's so important in weightlifting.
So what I'm hearing, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the load is the king. So if you can overload more, you will get better effect rather than what exercise you will choose. So you may want to prioritize the load and choose the exercise the person in front of you is able to do.
You hit the nail on the head. So using the exercise and load combinations within the phase of training to elicit the adaptations that you want. If I'm chasing peak force, my ceiling of force, I need to use really heavy loads. The problem is that with a catching variation, I'm limited to 100% because that's the most I can lift versus pulling variation, a mid-thigh pull or what have you, I can use considerably heavier load. And the idea is that if we're training a movement of extension of the hips, knees, and ankles, triple extension, the movement itself is the extension and the load is something that we can move within a variety of range of motions. So think about the positioning itself. And then obviously with a mid-thigh pull, the bar only moves, you know, this far. So because of that, we can use pretty or significantly heavy loads.
Okay, so how would you answer a question of using catching derivatives specifically for injury prevention and teaching the athletes or building the capacity to decelerate the loads? So any athletes that have to, I don't know, absorb energy in the sport?
It's probably one of the most common questions I get. And you know, given our research finding, I'm not surprised. One of the things I will challenge anyone to do with anything that I've written, Paul Comfort has written, or anyone who's doing derivative research, like the pulling variations, nowhere will it ever say, don't do catching variations. That's number one. Again, I challenge anyone to read any of the things that we've done, that Paul Comfort has done, Christoph Kipp, none of it will ever say, don't do catching variations. Because they are valuable. We've been using them for decades and decades. They are great exercises and they're very total body exercises. However, one of the things I will say is that the bar and the load do not magically disappear following a pull unless someone drops the bar. So the bar has to go somewhere. And more often than not, it comes back to the mid-thigh power position to reposition before the next repetition. So that being said, catching variations are certainly valuable because you go from a weightless load to having to accept a load, but pulling variations do the exact same thing. We have actually shown that the amount of work that's being done is comparable to catching variations with pulling variations, obviously depending on the load as well. There's certainly more research that needs to be done with that though.
So you're saying that catching after the pull, if the load is exactly the same, let's say with a clean or power clean catch, the amount of work will be the same?
Depending on the depth of the catch, yeah. So if you're doing a full clean with a full squat, there's going to be a lot more work involved because you have to stand up from it as well. But if you take, for example, something like a jump shrug, you have to jump and inherently you have to land. So when you come down and land, there's going to be a lot of force that's going to be created over a very short period of time. you know, very much an impact. So that is a unique force profile compared to a catch. A catch can be, depending on what the load is, if you do a power variation, you have a very short period of time where you're going to stop the bar, which is going to elevate the average force during the load acceptance phase, if you will. But it's going to be specific to each exercise and load combination, because we also looked at a hang high pull and showed that there's a very low mean force over a really long period of time. Compared to a jump shrug is high force over a short period of time, and a hang power clean is an average amount of force over an average amount of time. On that same topic, as someone gets better with power clean or catching variation, you also have to consider the peak barbell displacement to when they actually catch or stop the load. Because as individuals get better, that distance gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So the stimulus actually, if they catch it in the same position, same load, if you will, the stimulus gets smaller and smaller as they get better at it. But generally speaking, if as individuals are getting better with their technique, the load is also going to go up. So you kind of, it's a game that you're playing in terms of what the actual stimulus is itself. But again, certainly more work needs to be done. And I would also make the argument that if people are only doing catching variations because they get a quote load acceptance phase, I would advise them to actually start looking at eccentric variations of exercises, because that's truly what's going to emphasize that load acceptance compared to, now again, weightlifting movements exist on the eccentric training spectrum. I get that. We do eccentric research too. But again, if you really want to emphasize, you know, load acceptance, you might be better off doing, you know, the exercises that train that specifically versus it being a part of it. Again, but you can still get benefits from pulling variations and catching variations from a eccentric or braking standpoint.
Excellent. Thank you.
Study two was unique in that we were looking at different jump adaptations. So in this one, we were looking at the counter movement jump performances as well as the squat jump performances. In this study, we only looked at unloaded variations, just because there's a slew of variables with loaded jumps. That's a whole different story. But what we ended up finding with that is similar to study one, that the overload group improved the squat jump performance to a greater extent compared to both the catch group and pull group. But interestingly enough, the pull group actually had the greatest improvements in the counter movement jump performance. Part of that had to do with the really light loads that they were moving throughout the entire study. Generally speaking, you have faster velocities with a counter movement jump. And when you're using really light loads for the duration of a study, you're going to be training with really high velocities. And that actually was shown in our third study when we looked at a force velocity profile on those adaptations, that with the loaded jumps, what we ended up seeing is that the pull group, despite using the lightest loads, had the greatest velocity adaptations, kind of as expected, versus the overload group had the greatest force adaptation. So the take home message, again, kind of as it ties into, you know, all the studies together, is that phase specific loading for weightlifting movements is going to likely give you the greatest overall broad results. And I think for those listening who want to do catching variations and pulling variations, advocate for that. Really focus on what your loading is going to be to get the adaptation that you want. So if you're focused on rapid force production, you could use a combination of both heavy and light loads, but it should be exercise dependent. But also think about the individual you have. Are they a speed strength individual, or are they a strength speed individual? Because obviously, the former, speed strength, they need to use light loads and need to move them really, really fast, versus strength speed, we need to use heavier loads and move them really fast. So it's going to be a combination of exercises and loads, but also specific to the phases that they're going to be using. That being said, even if someone is using pulling variations as a bridge to catching variations, well, what I think our studies showed is that you can get a really good training stimulus from only using pulls, regardless of if they are used with really light loads or more phase specific loading. So there's a general progression that individuals can use, from using really light loads to heavy, and even progressing to catching variations once they are technically competent and are able to do so.
So it sounds that there is a reason to use weightlifting and teach weightlifting to your athletes. It's a great investment because they are very versatile in what they can provide in terms of the adaptations.
Absolutely.
The third study.
Yeah, the third study was looking at both muscle architectural adaptations as well as force velocity adaptations. So again, we looked at muscle thickness, pronation angle, and fascicle length with the ultrasound. So we looked at both the vastus lateralis and the biceps femoris, but then the force velocity adaptations were we used the isometric mid-thigh pull peak force, so force at zero velocity, as well as counter movement jumps performed at 0, 20, and 40%, looking at force at peak power and velocity at peak power. And we plotted those in terms of our force velocity profiles pre and post. So what we ended up finding was between the groups, there were really no unique meaningful changes or differences between the groups in muscle architecture. So prior to the study, really no differences. Post study, really no differences. They were very individualized adaptations as expected. However, the force velocity adaptations showed probably the biggest or unique changes. Now, keep in mind, obviously, when you have a group of people, some of them are going to improve more, some of them are going to improve less. And so what we saw was the greatest shift in peak force production with the overload group. So they produced the greatest change in isometric mid-thigh pull peak force versus the pull group showed the greatest adaptation or the greatest improvements in velocity for all the counter movement jumps and their loads. But the overload group was second. And interestingly enough, you actually saw a slight decrease in peak force production on average with the catch group. Now, part of that probably has to do with the fact that they didn't experience the same loads that, you know, that the overload group did. The pull group was obviously training out of that position regularly. Granted, all groups were, but yeah, it was very unique to see the changes in the force velocity profiles and how that may contribute to, you know, performance adaptations.
So if you would have to draw some conclusions for coaches from that, what would you say?
Again, similar is that the phase-specific loading, if I had my way, and again, this is going back to what we were talking about in what would you change about the study, if I could have an entire phase of training that was very low repetition strength in terms of like a 3x3 heavy strength training block, you may be able to play around with the force and velocity stimulus just a little bit more. The take-home message again is that phase-specific loading with weightlifting movements works. And with the exercise and load combinations that you choose, it's just key. It's just important to chase the adaptation that you want. So, and it shows over the course of the three studies that whether it is, you know, a power clean, whether it's iso pulls, sprints, change direction, jumps, you know, phase specific loading seem to give us the greatest adaptations on the broad scale of things. But that being said, most of the variables that we looked at were improved in every single group. It's just a matter of what we were specifically looking at. So catching variations work, pulling variations work, but I would just advise coaches that if you're going to use these exercises, load them specific to the adaptations that you're chasing.
Amazing. So two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift or derivative in weightlifting?
Of the weightlifting derivatives? Oh boy. Believe it or not, one of my favorite exercises is probably a hang snatch pull.
Why is that?
It's just an exercise I just feel I can move really fast in, and technique wise, I just feel it's just a fun one to perform.
All right. Accept.
Some people are probably like, Tim, you're nuts, but I mean, I like the exercise, but you know, I also really like mid-thigh power cleans because you feel really fast from that position. You know, you're set and then it's just hit it hard and go. But yeah, pulls from the floor, generally speaking, are also favorites of mine.
All right. And the last question, where people can find you when they want to follow your work or they want to ask a question or contact you?
Sure. My socials are the same for both X and Instagram. It's Dr. T. Sukumel. You know, don't post on there as much as I probably used to, but you know, anytime we have something out, I usually post it out there. And people have questions, I welcome them. This is stuff that I could talk about for hours and days and months. So feel free to reach out if you have questions.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tim. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.